Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, I'm not sick. You're sick. Your face is sick.
Definitely not sick, Justin Robert Young.
Hey, sick face, bro.
And Bryce Castillo.
Hey. Hi, everybody. That's my sick introduction. Hi.
Sick.
Sick.
So, gentlemen, it's a little Andrew-centric here, but I am now completely convinced that we are living in the simulation.
You've always been convinced of that. What's the latest? You tasted peanut butter that couldn't possibly have been created by humanity. It had to be. Yeah. The only way this peanut butter could be this good would be if we lived in a simulation.
Oh, yeah. By the way, patch notes for Andrew's simulation. Andrew becomes +5 aware of simulation. We hope the updates.
Brian, your observation's spot on. I mean, it's pretty much that. Like you ever watch something and you're like, you're in a dream and everything's kind of like, you have this thing happen. Like, I mean, this has got to be a dream because I walked into the store and all the clothes are like my size.
Yep.
Or, you know, like, oh, it's Elon Musk and he's hanging out. Wants to be best buddies with me. You know, and you're like, wait a second. This can't be life. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I started suspecting this because when Marvel movies started being really good, you know, that was suspicious, you know, like, these are not all perfect, but really good, that like some of the highest rated movies. Like, this is a little bit odd, guys. Come on, really? We got Star Wars back was great, but then it, like in a dream, like, you know, your glasses don't work and light switches don't work, that the Star Wars movies being maybe disappointing was kind of like that part of it, was because you could convince yourself Marvel movies are good because we never really had good Marvel movies before.
Sure. Plus, also they changed the spelling of Bernstein and Mandela and Kazam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a great movie, by the way.
Yeah. R.I.P. Sinbad.
So I watched a thing.
Uh oh.
And I'm like,
are we going straight to picks?
Oh, it's gonna be a pick. I watched a thing, and I'm like, man, like, if in 1999 you told me I would be watching this, I'd be like, oh, this is awesome. I wish we would have 10 years sooner. This is awesome. But this is really, this is like nerd porn for me. This was like they're going to hit all the Andrew buttons, bing, 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 you know? And I'm like, to the point that I'm like, all right, who's filming me here? Because this is really silly. What I'm talking about was Jeff Bezos' announcement about the plans for Blue Origin and the moon.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Detective Pikachu, but sure, we could talk about this.
Talk about that. When I watched the world's richest man go on stage, talk about, you know, dynamism, this super positive view of the future, bring out animations of O'Neill cylinders, these floating, you know, these space colonies that gonna have a million people and all this. I'm watching the richest man in the world talk about how excited he's about things I'm excited about. You know, I'm like, well, this seems really weird and on point for this. What I'm talking about, my long-winded introductions, Jeff Bezos did a 50-minute presentation last week where he unveiled his plans for lunar and solar exploration of basically helping humanity advance outwards. And it was an extremely forward-looking, very, very positive view of the future, which of course means it got a ton of criticism. but it was, to me, it was very interesting because you see where is Elon Musk's over my shoulder right now. You got to see where Bezos's view. Any of you guys get a chance to see any of this?
No, but I love the idea. Like, I'm sure he used a lot of euphemisms like exploration for the good of humanity and all that. I wonder how different it would be received if he just full on said, I'm taking the moon and you can't stop me. I'm going to take it.
Drudges.
I'm going to live there and it's going to be mine. Go ahead and just start calling it Mount Bezos. Save yourself the time. I'm taking the moon.
Well, he made a very big case for saying, hey, listen, if we want to keep if we want to continue progress, and progress meaning like, hey, we increase the amount of energy we use by 3% every year. If we want to continue to have people, and people are, I like people. I think we all like people. Not everybody likes people, it turns out, though. But anyhow, you know, he says we need to expand beyond Earth. And he says, like, Earth is the best planet. He made this big case. Earth is the best planet by far. Earth is the best planet. But if we want to go expand elsewhere, where do you want to go?
That's a really good point, Heckler, in the third row. I meant to add to my statement, you're welcome. You, my friend, have a place on Mount Bezos. You're welcome. You may be, exactly. Bring three friends.
I do love also.
But I got to vet them.
But he does have to, like, nib high football rules is the crowd in case people think that Earth is not number one.
Oh, it's 20 minutes.
One. Let me just say, Earth's the best. Everything else is the rest. Earth revived.
It is literally, you're watching. I'm like, man, like, how much? He could shave 20 minutes off of this. This is real animation from here, where he's showing this majestic view of this, like, Yellowstone inside of, like, a big cylinder.
Are you sure not? It's not bits from his DeviantArt account.
Yep. So he spent a lot of time going like, hey, listen, we got problems on Earth. Let me list some of them, because, and then, you know, people are like, well, he didn't mention this. Like, yeah. Oh, come on. All right. You know, like, it was just, he, and again, this guy, richest man in the world, biggest cum world. You can criticize him. He's open to criticism. I'm not going to, you know, say how.
He's very excited that he's debuted the new art. He's going to have airbrushed on his van.
Yeah. But it was you're looking at, you know, your smart, nerdy friend from high school, kind of like that. What if one day we did this? And yeah. Now you have that guy as richest man in the world, and now he's doing this. So we unveiled their plans. His goal is, says, what we need to do is build a road to the space, basically, you know, his play for reusable rockets and what they want to do. And a lot of it looks similar. A lot of it would hit a little bit more stronger if, I don't know, there wasn't another certain company out there. But he talked about Blue Origin's goal, and then he unveiled. He did it was like a David Copperfield thing. It was on the stage. They have this camera on a crane that's moving around, and he gestures towards the curtain, and the curtain pulls away and reveals. And imagine some, like, YouTube.
Oh, it's right there
here on
stage, isn't it? Yeah,
boom.
Yeah. Right?
He shows, which is their lander, which is the lunar lander they're building, which the Blue Origin, the Blue Moon, which is basically, it's a big ass platform designed to land rovers, space capsules, human sized rovers, etc., on the moon. And it uses hydrogen so that eventually, if you can build a plant on there to take the water that's on the moon and turn it into fuel, you can refuel it. He went into the technical details of it, whatever. Announced that this is their plan. They're going to be sending this thing to the moon with some payloads and stuff. And it's going to be an infrastructure that they want to make available. You know, hint, hint, you know, this administration says we want to go to the moon by 2024. Well, this could do it. So
do you think, okay, so let's take the current presidential administration at its word that we want to make it by 2024. Certainly, Bezos just made a credible case for why, you know, you might not automatically go with SpaceX, but surely SpaceX is going to get the gig, right?
Well, you need multiple parts of infrastructure. So if you want to land stuff on the moon, you need a way to land stuff on the moon. And that's, you know, SpaceX can get stuff into orbit and can shoot payloads towards there. But this is a system for landing on the moon. And, you know, Starship could do that, you know, would have to do like a couple of these highly elliptical orbits to fully fuel it up. And it could land and take off again. That's the thing, too. Starship can actually land there and leave again. This thing would just land there, and they'd have to have another module on top. Hardware. It's all about hardware.
Well, and I think that there's plenty of space to go around, boys. Like, if what Bezos and Blue Origin is pitching is like, hey, look, we're going to do this stuff. The more that the United States government wants to be involved in it, awesome. We would really love money. But other than that, this is what our plan is. We want to build infrastructure on the moon. We want to bring people to the moon. And this is every design plan and rollout is going to be in service of that. Then that's their pitch. And right now, you know, SpaceX seems far more focused on Mars exploration than they do on saying like, no, this is a thing we want to happen in the next several years.
Oh, no, SpaceX is very clear about moon. They're very, very clear. Yeah, we want to do the moon. We can do the moon. And Starship, they're building hardware now in the form of the Starship, which, you know, could do that. And the difference I would say here is that Blue Origin says, no, we've already got this planned mission to SpaceX has sent cargo or sent stuff towards there, but they haven't built their own lunar lander yet. Nothing like that. So,
yeah.
Are we waiting on? Do they have to develop new types of rockets in order to make this happen? Because right now they only have like a suborbital thing, right? Or one.
Well,
stage.
There's that detail, Brian. They do.
That's on me. I'm spoil sporting, aren't I?
Yeah, Brian. So they're building their next generation rocket. Right now they have the New Shepard, which is the suborbital one. This is very impressive, very cool. It goes up to the carbon line, comes back down, but not orbital class. They're building the next rocket, which is called New Glenn, which will be their orbital class rocket, which will be a monster-sized rocket. It'll have a pretty good payload. Still not as much as the Falcon Heavy, though. And it will – they say they're going to launch this in 2021. Now, what's interesting about this presentation, I highly recommend it because – You understand very successful people who have repeated successes or success that's lasted over a period of time often have a couple of things they look at when they see the world. You know, Elon Musk is the intersection of engineering and economics. Bezos is a lot of it's logistics. It's logistics and, you know, he talks about in costs and he talks about, you know, hey, our goal is if we want to build a space industry, we got to reliably go to space. And he says it like our goal is with our rocket, we want if Orlando Airport's open, we're going to be able to land our rocket. And, you know, to that end, the New Glenn is going to be able to land on a moving ship. The ship will be moving, so it's more stable in rough seas. And he says 2021 is when they're going to launch that.
Wow. I hope he's right.
Yeah.
Question mark.
Yeah. They got a big ass, you know, big ass warehouses and, you know, facilities in, you know, Orlando.
In a war between Coke and Pepsi, it's RC Cola that wins and the little guys. And I'm wondering who the RC Colas of this. Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly consumers, because like you can buy the cheap off brand third party alternative for, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a world from saying RC wins to the consumer wins. Yeah, we, the consumer, definitely win.
Well, yeah, because what I mean by this is these guys are pioneering and they are taking on the heavy, heavy hit of finding out what is possible to accomplish. Once it's confirmed what is possible to accomplish, everybody else saves those billions of dollars of R&D because we now know it's factually possible to land on a drone ship and all that stuff. And so all the hangers-on get to join the club.
It seems like from those videos that we've already seen our first beneficiary, considering like, you know, we've followed Blue Origin from the first moment that Blue Origin was a thing. But some of these videos and these rockets, they sure look like what SpaceX has done so far. Like,
well, one of the slides he talks about is that once you have this infrastructure reliably going to space and inexpensively, he says, you know, we could have thousands of new startups, thousands of new businesses. You can't start a space startup in your dorm room now. After this, you will be able to. And that's his big play. To your point, Brian, is saying once this infrastructure is there, and it's like, yeah, and he talked about how Amazon was possible because, hey, we already had a postal system. You know, we already had the internet. We already had credit cards. He didn't have to invent any of those things. They were there waiting to be utilized. You know, what'll happen once we have, you know, cheap access to space? And that's his point is like, yeah, now you're going to have all these new, like, I think the next big wave of the economy could be based on this. Sounds crazy, but so did the internet in the 1980s.
So then to bring it back, Andrew, in your simulation, what proves that this is more of a simulation and what proves that this is less of a simulation for you? Like, what are the things that happen that you're like, all right, I'm already 80%. Now I'm a full 100%. I understand that I'm living in a simulation.
Well, I mean, for me, it's like I've got sitting in a shelf here. I've got Gerald O'Neill is the guy who first came up with the idea of these O'Neill cylinders, these big, huge things. He wrote a book called High Frontier and stuff. And it's like a nerdy sort of been a thing I've been obsessed with since a kid. And so I guess for me, it was just all – and I the number of people who I've had conversations with in person where they even knew what that the hell I was talking about was, you know, non-zero, but very close to zero. And so all of a sudden, you know, I'm watching, it's like, I'm a Milhouse too. You know, that was my moment. Like, he said the thing that I like, you know.
So it's already done then. Like, yeah. Like there's nothing like from here. Like you've already gotten everything that could have possibly happened
I mean, I want it to happen. I want this to, you know, I'm, it's still hard to wrap our head around the idea that, you know, SpaceX is building Starship right now in some Texas field, that this thing could, this Mars capable rocket, which I, you know, and then it's like, man, that seems crazy. Then I get in my Tesla and I'm like, wow, this is a real thing, you know? So I don't know.
Well, here's what I do know. You can support this show by heading on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. Again, patreon.com/weirdthings. Thank you to everybody who has supported us. And please understand that we will not leave you hanging. This is the last episode where Andrew and I are going to be on American soil. We're boning out of the country. But
You see one presentation on going to the moon, and now you guys just PTFO. Got it.
Yep, that's it, Brian. But folks, you will not be out Weird Things content. No, we banked some episodes, and we are going to be talking all about them.
Oh, thank goodness. I thought you were saying we were going to introduce a new series, Weird Things, the Leftovers. It's just Brian and Bryce.
Yeah.
We're like, what would Justin say about this?
And then 2% of us disappear at the very beginning.
The post-Thanos snap. That'll be Weird Things in game. But yeah, go ahead and check us out. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
So, man, where are we going to live when we go off into space? How are we going to build these things? Well, this next story may offer some helpful insight into that. It's kind of a cool thing. There's this group, they haven't said where they're doing this, but they say that in some small community in Latin America, they're going to help build homes for 50 farmers and weavers. They're going to build homes for them, right? And what it is, it's a project. They plan to build these homes in 24 hours using 3D printing. The design firm Fuse Project, working with the housing nonprofit News Story and Icon, which is the company I think that has the technology, basically they plan to use 3D printers to build these homes. And their goal is to sort of, you know, hey, rest of the world, homes are really cool. Like physical, have your own structure sort of houses are kind of awesome. And, you know, let's put our use to technology maybe to helping other people have the cool things that we were just lucky by winning the birth lottery to have. So kind of a cool thing.
Is the point that a lot of people don't think houses are cool and they want to fix them, or or is it just that they can make these cheaper than you would expect?
I think the former, Brian.
Okay. All right.
I think housing, as you've seen in other countries, it's expensive and it's very difficult. And the idea is let's advance the technology and make it easier to produce these homes.
Yeah. It's really remarkable to watch these things work. They're basically just squirting out concrete goop and building them. And on the one hand, you know, I'm sure from a design aesthetic, seeing hundreds of homes with ant-like conformity in one way brings up images of, you know, Poland or the Soviets. But on the flip side, it also brings up the idea of safety during tornadoes and hurricanes.
Yeah, it brings up the concept of a roof. Yeah. It's a really cool thing when you don't have a roof.
Do we have any numbers on just how affordable this is being done?
You know, and I read through the story trying to figure out if they could give an example of what the costs were, and they did not. And, you know, one of the things to think about, too, is that, like, if you want to go build if you're trying to construct something, let's say, near Austin, Texas, hypothetically, the things you can count on, concrete companies.
Yeah.
Roads. Construction equipment. Skilled labor. Their Home Depot, all these things that we just take for granted. I mean, not you, but like we take for granted when we go to build a thing that are there. And when you go to lesser developed countries and you want to build a thing, like, you know, one of the, you know, my books on like how to make your own illusions and stuff, one of the biggest markets for them were lesser developed countries, because I would tell you how to build stuff out of cardboard and other materials, because, you know, these are people like, no, we don't, you know, some places still don't have Home Depots. They still can't go get these materials. So the advantage here is the idea of like, hey, we have a simple infrastructure. We can drop this thing in place, put in a bunch of concrete, and then we can build the whole thing without needing all that other housing infrastructure.
That's fascinating. How realistic do we think something like this is? I mean, the idea seems like a logical evolution of where we are with 3D printing and everything that we've learned from there. But, you know, oftentimes.
And I know I believe that there have been some even skyscrapers in China that have been 3D printed. So at least some version of the technology is already being used
on a scale from. This is the future of construction on one end to solar freaking roadways on the other. Where does this land in your mind, Andrew?
I think a form of this is going to work. I don't know that. I mean, we've figured out construction. We've solved the thing that everybody else was trying to solve for 1,000 years. We got the answer. Those first efforts tend not to work out so well.
Yeah, right. I guess it would be different if their demo video was a time lapse of them building a house and not a CGI render of what it.
Well, it does seem like that one of the companies involved in this has 3D printed a home already in 2018. The Icon
in Austin.
Company. In Austin. Oh wow. Yeah.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, I mean, there shows there's some really cool looks of like much more sophisticated houses and stuff. And I think that, I don't know. I mean, I'm excited about a radical new technology, although somebody could argue like, oh, so what you're saying is you're taking this sort of, you know, clay-like material and laying it down bit by bit and building it up. Like, yeah, we've never seen that before. Well, Adobe's in just about every house built, you know, 4,000 years ago. But now robots do it.
Yeah. Sure. But also, you know, with stylus, with style and structural integrity, which
yeah.
I would say that those are non-zero factors that matter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We've been using forms of additive, I guess, manufacture, you know, bricks, these things like that are similar. You know, like this is an existing thing. So we know that works. The materials that are made like this are useful to build houses. Now we have a different way of reducing the labor and time and the infrastructure. So I'm excited long-term about it. We'll see.
Yeah. I hope it happens.
Yeah. And I love
Justin
the
is
idea
just radiating skepticism here.
Well, no, I don't know. I, again, we love, this is the delicate dance that is done on the Weird Things podcast. Is very often we dabble in the futurism, and we always love the optimism, but there always is that. I mean, look, there's the solar freaking roadways thing where it's like sometimes it's just like all right, maybe this is a dumb idea and I just don't know why it's dumb. So let's say like all right.
This I mean, it all comes down to cost, right? If you could show me in hard numbers, what is the cost to erect one of these? And then more importantly, what is the cost to continue to heat and cool it? Sure. What is the cost to maintain it and all that stuff? And if those
Do you guys want to play a game? Because I found the number for the Austin house that they made.
Oh.
So they made this tiny house at South by Southwest in 2018.
Okay.
And I have the number for how much it cost them to build.
I'm gonna up the number because it's a prototype and say $60,000.
Right, Brian says $60,000. Justin,
and Brian, we probably should have saved you for last because you're definitely the one who has the firmest hand on what new construction looks like in Austin.
I'm working on it. My goodness.
So, yeah, I'm actually just gonna go with Brian.
Andrew, what do you think?
I'm going to say that the number they threw out there may not be a real number, so we'll get a low. I'm going to lower. I'm going to say like 30,000.
The number that they have here is the printed home cost was $10,000.
I don't believe that. That is amazing. Like, just the slab for our steel building that we're putting up on the new 7-acre Schwood was more than that. That's just the slab.
Icon's cost of the proof of concept was $10,000, but Icon hopes to bring it down to $4,000 for a home like the one printed this week. Now, this is a tiny home, so this might be smaller than the ones that they're making in in Latin America, but they do say they will average around $6,500 internationally.
I mean, that would be a game changer if they were able to pull that off. I don't believe it, but if they do, that would be phenomenal.
I believe they're liars. And they're
lying. I mean,
a beautiful lie.
Because am I being the bad guy right now?
No, I agree. Like, never. I'm just your henchman at this point. I'm just like, yeah, tell him, because I have no clue. Like, you are the only person. Literally, if Bryce were just like, hey, $100 if you can get within, you know, a spitting distance of this number, you would be the only person that I would call. So if you're like, absolutely not, that is like barely covering the concrete that needs to be the floor of other construction, then I agree with you.
Yeah, plus it's got like nice inlaid wood.
Yeah, so
it's all IKEA'd out.
Yeah, I don't
hard
have
to believe
a,
that.
As much information about, you know, the wooden finishers and the electrical, certainly not the real estate.
LED lights.
But also, you know, maybe. I don't know. It's a small
so,
home.
But this is your way of saying Andrew wins for being closest. Got it.
That is correct. Yeah.
Andrew was right because he bid.
I did say, I don't believe whatever number they said, but it's going to be a low number because... You know,
you did the equivalent of voting $1.
I share all of your skepticism, but I am excited about really what this means for people in other countries and places like this, because it's so easy
even in this country. And keep in mind, like, there's no shortage of folks who need better housing than they have right now. And it might be that. If we follow the Tesla dynamic, then what you do is you go to people who, instead of, you know, having a big, you know, custom fancy home, tell them why not have three, you know, 3D printed homes on your, I don't know, let's say anywhere from 7 to 7.5 acres. Like, I mean, I'm saying there's opportunities there.
Yeah. So cool. You guys want to jump into picks?
Heck yeah. Yeah. Y'all see that Game of Thrones last night? Do we want to save that for after things?
I'm gonna Cersei shimmy my way out of this conversation like Game Bowl's about to happen.
All right. Here's my pick. I got a galley copy from your friend of mine, Trey Ratcliffe, wrote a book called Under the Influence: How to Fake Your Way into Getting Rich on Instagram. And it's about influencer fraud, selfies, anxiety, ego, and mass delusional behavior. For those of you guys who don't know, Trey's made his bones by being a fantastic photographer, goes to Burning Man every year, takes incredible photos, and sees accounts that engage in varying degrees on the spectrum of authenticity and ethicality. And He doesn't say bad person or good person, but he just sort of says these are things that people seem to be doing, and these are the behaviors that you could see that to identify what games they're playing. I really enjoyed it. He was kind enough to send me an early copy, and kind enough to include me in the acknowledgments. But
what sorts of people?
Pump and dump schemes, you know, where you have bots. We talked a little bit about it a couple weeks ago with that dude that created the whole thing for the purposes of being able to eat for free. Where it would scrape other people's content. And what I dig about the book is, like, he's not making a strong value judgment. He's just saying these are all the tools on the menu. Like any set of lock picks, they could be used for good or for ill. You know, stuff like taking advantage of psychological backdoors to borrowing other people's content, to securing partnerships and sponsorships in bad faith. It's really interesting. And, you know, as somebody who, you know, on Twitter, I've made a big game of just being as friendly as possible, trying to follow anyone who will have me, and then being as friendly as possible on there. It was doubly interesting for me to sit there and question, like, well, where do I fall on this spectrum? And I think you guys will enjoy it as well.
Very cool. Trey's a really cool guy. Trey's a very, very clever man. I think he kind of pretty much was one of the pioneers of HDR.
I remember seeing doing it. And now it's like, that's just what it is.
Lon
like,
Makes in the chat says, I really don't understand why they don't crack down on bot activity on Instagram. Short answer is because bot activity benefits Instagram. So why would you crack down on the thing that is definitely benefiting you? And you could say the same thing for Twitter. Because again, there's a spectrum of, you know, some bot accounts are actually adding to the conversation by being fun and funny and curating content and sharing and highlighting other people's work. So why would you want to crack down on any of those things?
You also have to protect your numbers and your engagement numbers.
Correct.
And at times like Twitter recently, and it's only over like the last like 2 years have they taken any kind of meaningful steps toward reducing bot activity, because there were a lot of accounts and they were being judged with their stock, their publicly traded stock, on how active people were and how many accounts there were.
Yep.
I got a pick. So I'm going to Italy at the end of the week.
Your pick is Italy.
Italy.com.
It's the country of Italy. So I knew that I would be like ready. I'd be like turning my brain toward this trip when I started reading. So I'm going to give you guys the two books that I am I've gotten to get myself excited. The first is my pick so far, which is Sicily, as written by John Julius Norwich. It's a really, really good history. Sicily is a fascinating island that is, been conquered by everybody who, has ever conquered anything in that region. It's only been an Italian property for 150 years. And before that, there's just like so many civilizations that have been like written and rewritten and rewritten on Sicily. And also I'm listening to the audiobook and he's like a very a proper British man who formerly worked at the Foreign Service. But it was only when I realized that there was a paucity of Sicilian history that I decided to put pen to paper. So he's great.
I was this close to saying the Sicilian, which is very different.
Yeah. but I'm pumped. And then the other book I got is God's Bank, all about the history of the Vatican and lending money.
So basically Godfather 3. That's what you're reading. You're just you know.
Basically. Yeah. We're doing the starter kit.
Yep. Also, the documentary, The Young Pope, highly recommended.
I got a pick. I fell into this over the past week after hearing nothing but good words about it from someone, some people on this podcast, and it is the Darknet Diaries podcast.
Oh, you jumped in!
Yep.
Dude, Jack Reesider is crushing it.
It's pretty good. It's nice. I like it. I trust it, but I also am someone, I feel the storytelling, but I also want to feel the journalism a little more in terms of like sources and stuff. Because it's like, oh, and then they went and did this. And I'm like, well, how do you know that?
Well, but occasionally he gets like
interviews.
He gets original sources. But that's definitely how I felt. And if Jack is listening, I love you, Jack. That's how I felt when you could tell that Jack thought he was blowing the lid off of fraud on the Apple iTunes rankings when, you know, ultimately – by the time I was done listening, it's like, in fact, I texted him. I'm like, yeah, just turns out a lot of people don't use Apple for their podcast app, and it's just a very soft target. Mm-hmm. And it ended up feeling a little less, you know, amaze nuts.
Yeah. But this last episode about LVS, about...
Oh, yeah, that was a great one.
Casino hack is really great. It was the Carbonac, the ATM hack. From a few weeks ago also. That was really good. So I really like that. Darknet Diaries.
Very cool. My pick is the Jeff Bezos presentation, about the moon. You know, you can look up Blue Origin Jeff Bezos moon. There's a 50-minute presentation, but I think it's well worth watching the whole thing. If nothing else, Jeff Bezos, love him or hate him, is one of the most influential people in the world today, influential, good or bad, and making decisions that affect the lives of millions of people. And if you want to see, hey, this is what excites him, this is the project that, you know, when he, once he's like, all right, we've got those quarterlies done, let me go do my fun thing, this is what I want to spend my rest of my life working on, this is it, this is where his head is. So worth watching.
Cool.
There you go. It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.